Well, open your Bibles up to Matthew 12 and verses 1 to 14. Let me ask you a question at this time. Are you a legalist or an anarchist? Do you love to follow rules and insist that everybody follows them, or do you hate them? It's interesting how often this conversation comes up. I was sat in the hairdressers yesterday, and what was she talking about? People that won't wear masks. Here are the rules, but they won't wear them. Or they have no facilities to nip to the loo in their hairdressers, so they have to go across to the pub. And she was talking about the fear of walking through a pub with people who just won't wear masks. People coughing openly and having to walk through that. It's interesting, isn't it? Some of us love rules. Some of us see a rule as something to challenge or to immediately break. Apparently psychologists have a name for that with children. It's pathological avoidance disorder, which just means whenever they hear a rule, they will stamp all over it. Now, interestingly, we tend to categorise people into those who like rules and those who don't. Those who love freedom and those who are happy to live a more structured life. But actually, it's a bit more complex than that, isn't it? We're all both legalists and anarchists. We all love the law and we all love freedom, and we pick and choose what we apply when. We've seen that particularly with the rules on COVID-19, haven't we? It can be easy to condemn someone for breaking one rule while we kind of, what we call it, flexing rather than breaking a different rule. Or maybe it's in your approach to everyday laws, like speed limits, where you park, cycling on the pavement, using your car horn, or what time of the week you vacuum. Did you realise it's actually illegal to vacuum at certain times of the week? For some of us, that's a relief and we don't need to worry about it. But for others of us, actually, we may have been breaking the law and never realised it. We all pick and choose what laws we obey. We all pick and choose what we think is important and what we don't. We're all both legalists and anarchists. But what about when it comes to the Bible? Is a Christian an anarchist or a legalist when it comes to God's law? Are we free from the law or are we under the law? And what about specific laws? You'll have noticed as we read Matthew 12, the specific law is the Sabbath. Do we keep it? Do we not keep it? What does that look like? You may have quite strong opinions on it. Lots of Christians do. Lots of Christians have strong opinions on it on both ends of the spectrum and in all sorts of places in between. And people act differently according to their conscience. And that is the big issue in Matthew 12. But actually, there's a bigger issue underlying this. And it's vital we just get the context this appears in. Just glance back at the end of chapter 11 and verses 28 to 30. Jesus invites the crowd, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." Jesus issues this beautiful invitation to those who are burdened and weary, to come to him and find rest. To those who are seeking for God, but feeling like a failure, who've tried really hard to be righteous, but just know they can't maintain it. Those who are weighed down by the law and its requirements. Those who hear what the Pharisees say and just recognise that they are utterly unable to do it. Jesus says, there is one thing for you to do. Do you spot the thing? He says, come to me. You don't need to strive, you don't need to try hard, you don't need to have a list of do's and don'ts. There is one do. Come to me and I will give you rest, he says. Come trust me, come put your faith in me and be at peace with God. Notice how he describes the rest. It will be rest for your souls. But let me ask you a question. Doesn't that sound a bit too good to be true? Maybe, in fact, you're even thinking, you know, I know people who are Christians and that description doesn't fit them. They're not restful, they're constantly busy. They've got a list of do's and don'ts as long as your arm, and if you break it, they're quite quick to tell you about it. They don't seem unburdened, they seem burdened. They're not free. Maybe for some of us, we think, actually, do you know what, this is me this morning. I read that invitation from Jesus, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. And I think, do you know what? I don't feel at rest. I feel restless. There is a danger for us when we follow Jesus that having trusted him over time, living out of the rest Jesus gives morphs into doing things for Jesus to feel like we've earned that rest. That can be particularly true if we find ourselves struggling with guilt when we rest or when we can't do and others do. When we're laid aside and can't, we somehow feel that our relationship with God changes. It's easy for discipleship to morph into being not living out of an awareness of grace, but it's become about doing or not doing so you don't disappoint God. That happens really easily. So I'm just going to think about the question this morning. Is Jesus' offer right? When he says, come to me and find rest for yourselves, and what would that look like? Is this just another overhyped sales pitch? Or is this real? Well, in Matthew 12, Matthew deliberately puts this clash of two kingdoms straight after Jesus says those words. Now, there is this huge clash between Jesus and the Pharisees. And actually, the bigger clash is, it's a clash to do with kingdoms and attitudes to God and the character of God and the law. It's a clash that's there to help Matthew's readers see how different trusting Jesus is to living like a Pharisee. To see the difference that following and serving Jesus and finding rest makes. As opposed to struggling and striving to provide your own righteousness that leads to weariness, being burdened and burdening others. But here's the hard thing this morning. Looking at this passage involves us using the Pharisees as a mirror. And that's not very pleasant. And we look at the Pharisees this morning and just hold them up before us and say, okay, who do I look more like? Jesus or the Pharisees? Because Jesus here shows us what life serving in his kingdom under his yoke looks like. And he gives us two defaults for disciples. Here's the first this morning. Disciples default to mercy. Look down at verse 1. Jesus and his disciples walk through the cornfields. Ministry has left them hungry. They've been serving, they've been teaching, they've been doing all sorts of things. And at the end of that, they are hungry. And so as they go, the corn is ripe. So they pick some ears of corn and they start eating it. And you think, that's fine, there's no problem with that. But there's one small little seven-letter word in verse 1 that makes this a huge issue for some people. It is that word Sabbath. They walked through the cornfields on the Sabbath. His disciples were hungry and began to pick some ears of corn and eat. And we think, well, there's no big deal with that. There's nothing wrong. But look at the Pharisees. The Pharisees are horrified. The way it's described by Matthew, look, he says, and the NIV gives that an exclamation. This is a shock and horror moment. How dare your disciples pick and eat grains of wheat on the Sabbath? Jesus, how could you let them do that? And we think, what on earth is going on? Well, the Pharisees are referring back to Exodus 20 and verse 6 and the law on the Sabbath. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. 6 days shall you labour and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work. Now, let me say, it's easy for us to misunderstand the Pharisees. They want to please God. They are really concerned with holiness, and they take God's word really, really seriously. And in order to make sure that they took it seriously and lived it out, they had added layer upon layer to each of the laws to codify exactly what it looked like to live according to it. So you can find all sorts of things that they said you could not do on the Sabbath. And one of them was reaping corn. Hence their horror at the disciples' actions on the Sabbath. Even for them, picking a couple of ears of corn counted as reaping. Reaping was work, therefore they're breaking the Sabbath. And just think about the implications of that for the Pharisees. When they say, look, your disciples are doing what's unlawful on the Sabbath, who are they challenging? Jesus. Jesus, how can you be a good teacher or a prophet, let alone the Messiah, if you're letting your disciples break the Ten Commandments? How can you be the Messiah sent from God if you're letting the disciples break God's law? Now, that's the context in which we get Jesus' words in verse 3. Jesus wants the Pharisees to see they're missing the point. Missing the point both in terms of the Sabbath and the law, but more importantly in terms of who he is. At verses 3 to 8, Jesus is talking about his identity and his authority. That's the issue here, because that's the challenge. The Pharisees are saying, Jesus can't be the Messiah because he breaks the law. Jesus is saying, you don't understand who I am. But he begins by taking them back to the Old Testament in verses 3 and 4. And he takes them back to David, King David, before he was king, on the run in 1 Samuel 21 from Saul. And they've got no food. He's had to hurry out of the palace as Saul tries to pin him to the wall with a spear. And on the run, he stops by where the priests are in the tabernacle, and he's asking them for bread. And the priests say they've got none. They've only got the bread of the presence that the law said it was only lawful for priests to eat. But the priest gives it to David. He takes it, and the men eat it. Now, technically, that's breaking the law, isn't it? And yet the priest is willing to give it to them, because there are exceptional circumstances. And then Jesus gives a second case where the law is broken, and this one specifically about the Sabbath in verse 5. He talks about the priests. The priests break the Sabbath when they serve in the temple because they make offerings. But they're innocent, according to the law, because they're serving God and enabling people to worship him. So Jesus says, look, you've got the law and you treat it as a straitjacket, but actually even within the law there is flexibility. The problem for the Pharisees is they've shrunk the law. The law was God's good gift intended to bring life for his people. But the Pharisees have shrunk it down, like a t-shirt. You know, your favourite t-shirt that mum puts in the wash and puts it on too hot a wash, and it ends up shrinking two or three sizes, and then you kind of put it on but you're constricted and can barely breathe, and nothing works anymore. The joy in life it's designed to give has been lost. That's what Jesus means when he says those words in verse 3, haven't you read what David did? Or haven't you read verse 5? He said, look, you've not realised the law is a gift. It's not a straitjacket. Some circumstances are exceptional, like David's. His life is under threat. He's on the run, and therefore it's right for the priest to give it to him. Others are different because they are serving God and his kingdom, like the priests. And that's what's happening here. Now Jesus gets to his identity in verse 6. Look what he says, something greater than the temple is here. Jesus has come, God made man, the one who wrote the law, the one the law points to, the one who fulfills the law, and he brings the kingdom. The kingdom is here, something greater, because the king is here. And so the disciples are serving in the kingdom, and just like the priests do, they are, look at verse 7, what does he say? You would not have condemned the innocent. So the disciples are innocent of Sabbath breaking because they're serving in the kingdom. You need to see who I am, what I've come to do, and then you wouldn't make this accusation. The one stood before them, who they're challenging about the law, is the lawgiver, God the Son, explaining his law with his authority. The Pharisees have missed the point. Look at verse 7. Jesus again quotes the law, and he quotes from Hosea, if you'd known what these words mean, I desire mercy, not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the innocent. God has always desired mercy over sacrifice. The Pharisees don't. That's why the priests were right to give David the food. It was an act of mercy, not rigorously keeping to the law. And Jesus is saying that the default of the disciple must be mercy, just as the default of God and of Jesus is mercy. Think about that in gospel terms for a minute. If God was a legalist, there would be no salvation. We would all be condemned. But God is a God of mercy. The disciples are innocent, Jesus says. These are exceptional circumstances, just like for David, because Jesus is here, the Messiah is here, the kingdom is here. And the Pharisees' legalistic application of the law at the expense of mercy is wrong. It misses the nature of the law giver. That's what Jesus says in verse 8, for the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. Jesus has authority. He made the Sabbath. He was there at creation. He's the agent of creation. He was there when the law was given. It is his Sabbath. He is Lord of it. He can explain what it looks like to live it out. And it's not small and constricting and legalistic. It is a gift to bring rest, like the rest of the law. the rest Jesus has spoken of offering at the end of chapter 11. The law is not designed, the Sabbath is not designed to be a burden to bear or a weapon to be used to accuse and judge as a way of differentiating between the righteous and the unrighteous. The Pharisees' view is too small. They've made the law a yoke you can't bear. While Jesus offers a yoke to his disciples and they serve alongside him and it brings life. They find rest even as they serve and their default is to be merciful. And the challenge for Matthew's readers as they read this is then to hold up the Pharisees and Jesus' ways of living and ask themselves, which am I? Which is my default? Do I default to mercy or judgment? Am I quick to judge or am I quick to act compassionately? We've seen Jesus in Matthew's gospel again and again and again live and breathe mercy. Bring those separated from God back to God by grace. There is that question. Do I default to mercy? Am I more like Jesus or more like the Pharisees? But then in verses 9 to 14, we see the second default of the disciple. Disciples default to doing good. As Jesus moves on, verse 9, he goes to the synagogue and a man with a shriveled hand is there. We don't know if he's the bait in a well-laid trap for Jesus or if he just happens to be there. We don't know if he's a plant or it's just a coincidence. But the Pharisees don't pass up the opportunity. The Pharisees allowed on the Sabbath healing where life was in danger. If your life was in immediate threat, someone could act to help you. But that's not the case here. This shriveled hand is not going to kill this man. And look at what we're told in verse 10. Looking for a reason to bring charges against Jesus. Matthew shows us their motives, that they want to charge Jesus. They ask the question, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? It's an obvious trap, isn't it? Jesus is well aware that they've laid it for him. That he knows this is part of this growing conflict we've seen over recent weeks. He knows the Sabbath is a hot topic. He isn't naive as he speaks. He very cleverly answers a question in a question that actually turns the onus back on them and exposes their hearts. If any of you has a sheep and it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will you not take hold of it and lift it out? What's the answer? They would always say, of course I would. Of course I would. It would be cruel to leave a sheep there. And then Jesus turns his laser precision, heart testing equipment on them. How much more valuable is a person than a sheep. Therefore, it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. Jesus has just taught that God desires mercy, not sacrifice. Here's an opportunity for the Pharisees to be merciful, but they miss it. They have the man with the shriveled hand in front of them who needs healing. They should have been asking Jesus to heal him. They'd seen him do lots of things similar. But instead, they just see the man as an opportunity to trap Jesus and accuse him. And Jesus shows them their inconsistency. They'd help a sheep, but they won't help this man. But not Jesus. Jesus lives out what he teaches, even when it brings opposition. Jesus says, doesn't he, verse 12, how much more valuable is a person than a sheep? He loves and sees the value of every person. And it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. The Sabbath was designed for doing good, not as a straitjacket to stop us doing good because it might involve too much work. How is the law summed up in the Bible? It's summed up as love the Lord your God with your heart, your soul, your mind, and your strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. That's the way to work out every application of the law. But the Pharisees have shrunk it. They've restricted it as they've added layer upon layer upon layer of application. They've lost the heart of the law. It's lawful to do good on the Sabbath, and Jesus does. He heals the man completely. Notice that. Look at verse 13. Matthew stresses, so Jesus said to the man, stretch out your hand. So he stretched it out, and it was completely restored, just as sound as the others. Notice that, completely restored, just as sound. It's a double expression for the same thing. Matthew wants us to get Jesus can totally heal. Jesus does good. Jesus proves who he is. He's the authority. He's the Messiah bringing the kingdom, and he fulfills the law. He does what the Sabbath is designed to do, bring good, bring rest. As disciples, our call is, if we follow Jesus, to be like him. It's really easy, isn't it, to slip into a legalistic mindset, to have a list of to-dos and to-don'ts, just like the Pharisees. But Jesus shows us God's character. He is merciful and does good and always has and always will. And as those who follow him, we must be like him. That's what it means to take Jesus' yoke upon us, in verse 29 of chapter 11. That's why it's light and we find rest as we serve alongside him in his kingdom. We're not bound by rigid do's and don'ts. We're called to live out the spirit of the law written on our hearts by the Holy Spirit. To love God with our whole being. To love our neighbour as ourselves and do good and show mercy. Do you see the defaults of the disciple? Like our God and Saviour, we are to value and love people. And that will work itself out in doing good and showing mercy as we engage in ministry. That's what the disciples are doing. The Pharisees stand here as a stark warning. They are like a mirror that reveals to us the dangers. That causes us just to ask the question, whose disciple am I, Jesus or the Pharisees? Are there places where legalism limits the good and the mercy I do? Are there places where I am quick to judge and ignore suffering rather than be marked out by Jesus' love? Having been shown goodness and mercy, do we live out goodness and mercy? Is our view of God too small and what he calls us to too small? Jesus confronts the Pharisees with their failure to do good to this man. He's there right in front of them. But they won't help him. They won't show him love, supposedly because they're loving God by rigidly keeping the law. You can see, can't you, how wrong they've got it. But I have to ask myself the question, do I ever miss those same opportunities for the same reasons? Because my eyes aren't open, that my heart's not warm, my hands are not ready. Other opportunities I miss in my home, my community, my nation. There's one other thing here, just to think through in terms of application. Jesus' words here are not just challenging individuals, they are challenging the whole structure the Pharisees had built up to do with living. They had this rigid structure of laws and actions that divided people, that put people in their place and kept people down. Notice Jesus challenges that. And that means that as disciples, we are to challenge that. He challenges their whole understanding of the law, their whole understanding of society, their whole understanding of the way to God. He's challenging structural injustice. Now that's a challenge, isn't it? Where are there structural injustices that as believers we ought to challenge? It could be in the church, it could be in society. Sexism, ageism, racism, classism. Other injustices, things that just keep people down in their place. And God, through Jesus, calls us to love people and do good and be merciful as we hold out the gospel to them and as we serve them practically. It's interesting, isn't it? All this follows on from Jesus in chapter 10, sending out his disciples. To do what? To preach the gospel and to do good to people. To proclaim the kingdom, to show them the kingdom in word and action. And we see that continue here with Jesus as he proclaims it in word and action and as he challenges their society and its way of doing things. But just look down at verse 14 as we close. Look at the Pharisees' reaction. But the Pharisees went out and plotted how they might kill Jesus. They hear who Jesus claims to be. They see the miracle. They've heard his teaching of the Bible, but they won't believe him. They see the man healed completely. But rather than respond in faith, they angrily plot how they kill him. It's ironic, isn't it? What are they planning to kill him for? Because he's broken the law on the Sabbath, according to them. And yet, what are they doing? They're breaking the law on murder. What a reaction. Fury at eating a few plucked ears of wheat and a healing on the Sabbath leads to a plot to murder the Messiah. Jesus calls those who know God to do good. The Pharisees reveal that God is not their father with their actions. But just before we're too quick to condemn, we have to ask that question, am I more like them than I'm comfortable with? Do I rush to judge or do I rush to be merciful? Am I quick to do good or quick to find reasons not to? Jesus offers us rest. Not a rest of doing nothing, but serving in his kingdom. He is gentle and he is humble. He is the opposite of the harsh and the judgmental Pharisees. He doesn't load us up with burdens, doesn't layer on law. He comes and fulfills the law for us, goes to the cross to die for us in the ultimate act of mercy. He provides healing, not just for withered hands, but withered hearts. And in him we find rest for our weary souls. As we serve a humble and gentle King, as we look and see his grace and act mercifully and do good to others, as we hold out the kingdom, not burdened trying to earn salvation, but flowing from his character and his love that we have drunk deeply of. You see the two kingdoms this morning? You see the promise from Jesus? You see the nature of his kingdom? Do you see the call to go do good and be merciful as we serve a humble and gentle King who will always welcome us? We're going to just take a couple of minutes. We're just going to listen.